as a Portland State University Masters of Urban and Regional Planning student in 2010. For my final master's project, I worked with three other students to collect data about the park, including an inventory of the physical elements of the park and an assessment of how it was used by the community. Using that information, we developed a set of preliminary recommendations PPNR could consider for during future planning processes. When I was asked to be part of the advisory committee, I was excited to continue working on in the planning process in this park. I was very excited to see that in addition to recently collected data and analysis conducted by PPNR and consulting staff, the staff used the information and preliminary recommendations our student group collected in 2010 to inform the process. Willamette Park is a unique place, as it serves as a local gathering spot for neighbors, a regional destination for recreationalists, an integral part of the off-street bike-ped transportation network on the west side, and a unique oak and riverbank habitat. It was great to participate in a committee where all of these characteristics were considered during the decision-making process. As a regional user, I served with that voice on the committee. This led me to voice my support for projects that enhance the park user access to and habitat quality along the Willamette River's riverbank. The advisory committee's recommendations supporting riverbank restoration, as well as constructing river viewing locations and riverbank access points. As a regional user, I also felt that it was important to make improvements that will safely facilitate the expected increase in bike-ped traffic through the park. The committee discussed improvements that could be implemented to plan for future usage, such as increasing the trail width, improving the park entrances, directing fast-moving bicycles to a specific route, etc. I gave many of these projects a high priority and was happy to see that these elements were supported by the larger committee in the final concept. I believe having both neighborhood and regional voices on the committee helped to develop a redevelopment plan that will improve the experience of all of Willamette Park's visitors. I once again thank PPNR staff for inviting me to participate in this process and all of the City Council members for your time.
Thank you.
Probably okay. Going to have to get a little sign that we affix to it.
Either that or remote control.
Mayor Hales and commissioners, my name is Jim Gorder, and I was a member of the advisory committee of the planning process at the park. I am also a resident of the Burlingame neighborhood overlooking the park and use it as a casual user. I came to interest in the park as a member of the City Club of Portland Forest Park study and advocacy committees, and Commissioner Fish and I have talked on that before. And as a result of the Forest Park work, I also worked on was a member of the Parks Bureau Budget Advisory Committee a couple of years ago. So I was eager to continue my interest in the parks, as both as a citizen and resident of the area. I was very impressed with the work that the committee did, the recruitment of the quality of people who advocated for various interests and for the park as a whole was outstanding. And I was also very impressed with the expertise of the Parks Bureau and BES and other city bureaus that were involved with the process. As was said earlier, Willamette Park is a small area with a lot of diverse uses in it, in addition to the natural area component of it. And our committee worked hard to reach consensus on that. And then I think the product speaks well for the parks, for the city, and for the citizens. And I'm now looking forward to seeing the project implemented. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for anyone on the panel?
Please. Thank you for all your work on an exciting plan, and obviously a lot of time and effort has been put into it. I'm wondering about signage, particularly for the restoration areas. Is there any consideration of having some signs that would talk about what's been done and why?
You want to address that? So we have talked about that.
So part of our planning process is we will have explanation of what is happening on the bank layback and why we're doing it. We're also looking in parks for when we do environmental interpretation that it may not always be a sign. You may be able to come up with your smartphone and scan something when you come into the park, and out will pop everything that tells you about what you're about ready to see. So we'll also be doing some signage, but also doing some whole array of interpretation.
What discussion was there about the Native American heritage in the area and maybe incorporating that in some of the interpretive signage?
That's a good suggestion, and as we move forward, we'll be looking into that.
And I do encourage you to not be having our smartphones or even dumb phones as we're walking along the side of the Willamette. I think it's important to be where we are. So to me, having some signage that would reflect the centuries that people in this area have used that area and why we're devoting what some people call sewer money, but in fact it's environmental services money, to that restoration area. I think that then helps people understand why they should use the fence dog off-leash area and not have their dogs running through the restoration area. So I know that you've looked at all of these issues, and I really appreciate the well-thought-out plan. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Other questions? Please, Dan.
So am I correct that there's still no connectivity north of the park? So all these people that are going to be taking this new trail off the Selwood Bridge are going to dead end at the
There is. No, we do have the Greenway Trail north of the park. We do have an unfortunate 90-degree angle when you come back past the Sailing Club to go 90 degrees to then go along the Willamette Greenway along the river.
Oh, so there is a Greenway
connection. So there is a continuous pathway that will go from the Selwood Bridge. We are at this time working with the Department of Transportation and others to see how we can get the 90-degree angle to go away between now and 2016.
And you're talking about at the northern end of the park?
It's past the park. It's just past the Sailing Club.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it's actually on an easement at that point, right?
It is.
On the adjacent condominium
project. Okay.
Yeah. Right.
Correct.
Right. I should also, to Dan's point, just acknowledge that the county owns some property that is fairly proximate to the bridge that they have agreed as part of a larger conversation we've been having to actually either deed to us or give us access to, which I think is going to help us not only get water access, but with the trail. So they've been a good partner in helping sorting through some of these issues.
And I think Commissioner Saltzman brings up a really good point. The vision is to have a multi-purpose path connectivity all the way from the Selwood Bridge to downtown. That's going to happen in segments over time. As you know, we have a portion of that in South Waterfront under construction, again, about 1,000 feet. But the comprehensive vision of this community is that there will be ease of access all the way down to the Selwood Bridge ultimately. And so piece by piece, we'll resolve some of these issues.
The other thing I just want to point out with that is with the completion of the new TriMet Bridge, just as we have everybody that jogs from the Steel Bridge to the Hawthorne Bridge, we'll have a whole new loop in the southern part of the city with the Selwood Bridge improvements and the TriMet Bridge. So that is, again, a big recreational opportunity that we're going to be providing by improving trail and access through the park.
I think with the completion of those two projects, Portland's the only city I know of with a double bike beltway.
Right. Mike, I have a question. I know that funds are tight for this particular project, but the way it's currently proposed, if the city chose, could they upgrade the surfaces of the ball fields and use all weather surface funds if the funds were available?
Yes, and you know that is that's a priority bureau wide where we can, particularly in heavily used parks and fields, is to replace as many of those with synthetic turf as possible.
Other questions?
A depressing question, Mike. I seem to recall you're saying to me a few months ago that the parks has something like an $800 million backlog of maintenance and projects to be done, and I was just wondering, with the $1.5 million in you know, unfunded element of this plan, which looks fantastic, by the way. I mean, extremely impressive. Would that be part of the $800 billion, or would that be part of the additional things we'd like to do in addition to addressing the $800 billion backlog?
Thank you for that question, Commissioner Novick. With a new park, it doesn't add to our backlog of deferred maintenance. The council has a policy that says when you approve the construction of park improvements, at the same time you evaluate and approve ongoing operation and maintenance, so the operational side of new parks. When we bring them to you, you have approved those. So, and we have some projects under construction right now that we'll be coming to you and talking to you about in the months ahead, the fields, for example. But so the day-to-day operations, usually when we bring a new park online, that is taken care of within the budget. But a new one doesn't add to your deferred maintenance. Okay. As long as you maintain, you know, you can keep up the ongoing maintenance. This is a relatively new policy, so many of the things that are on our deferred maintenance or replacement schedule were built long before that policy was ever in effect.
Okay, so the $800 billion is just deferred maintenance on existing parks, and this is separate from that.
And actually, just to fine-tune the numbers a little bit, that it's actually closer to $400 million for deferred on existing facilities, and there's another about $450 million estimate of what it would cost to build out the system to achieve a common level of service. So total together, it's $850 to $900 million.
Thank you.
Yeah. Great. Other questions? Thank you all.
Thank you.
And I think we have some others signed up to testify.
We have one more person, Mike Dowd.
Good morning.
Hi. I'm Mike Dowd, 0753 Southwest Miles Street. I live and work next to the park, right at the very south edge. Because of I'm there day and night, I think I know more about how the south end of the park works than anybody anywhere. I also was a member of the committee and share all the positive comments people said about that process and all the people involved. I guess I wasn't a platinum member, though, because where the other two people got private invitations to talk, I didn't find out about this hearing until last night from a generic email yesterday afternoon. I've been trying to talk to parks since early November about issues with the bike circulation and haven't had any of my emails returned other than promises that were never kept that they would be talking to me. And that's my concern is the bicycle circulation. I understand that you're only voting to adopt this plan as a guide, and I don't think any of this really should change the vote to adopt it, but I think people need to be aware that there are some huge problems with the proposed bicycle circulation. I wrote all my specific reasons here, and I'll drop this off. Also have a letter from my neighbor from earlier who's will be really negatively affected by this. There was really no public input that involved explaining carefully to people the numbers involved and the impacts of the bike circulation on people. So I hope as the plan progresses that there'll be more opportunities to talk about the parts of the master plan. Like everybody said, it's a huge, complex park, and we only had a few meetings to come up with a master plan, which I think is amazingly good for the time we had, but it doesn't mean it doesn't have big flaws. I guess to explain it quickly, the bicycle circulation, basically what the plan does is spend $300,000 or $400,000 to move about 200 yards of bicycle circulation from the regional trail along the river to the smaller trail that runs right in front of the houses, including my house. So that's 10,000, like I said, 10,000 bikes a day within a few feet of our decks. It doesn't give bikers the opportunity to take the part of the trail that's empty if they want to avoid people. The basic flaw in it is that it's a loop trail, so there's pedestrians everywhere. That this doesn't separate them at all, and yet it's spending hundreds of thousands of dollars. And those same pedestrians and bikes are sharing the mile after mile of that loop trail throughout the rest of the city on a 7 to 8 foot wide path. So to me, it makes no sense to design it the way it does, to try to solve, you know, a conflict for 200 yards. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Others that want to testify? Yes, I would like to return to that point for just a minute with staff, and that is, this may be a question not just for parks, but for others as well, transportation. And that is, you know, Emily, I was really struck by the numbers that you quoted. I mean, we're going to have a lot of commuters once the Selwood Bridge is not the terrible barrier that it is now. You know, a few crazy people ride their bike across the Selwood Bridge. A few of us occasionally venture to walk across it, but it's not a good trip on a bike in either case as current in the former configuration. So this revelation, or at least reminder for me, that there are going to be a lot of bike commuters in this corridor. We've got a combination of sort of ad hoc solutions on private property, easements, new sections. Do we have, as a city, an intended design type that goes the distance? Do we know what we ultimately want to see from the Selwood Bridge to at least the new bridge, if not all the way downtown? Has that been agreed upon, or are we still making this up as we go along? I don't mean that to sound as harsh as it sounds, but.
Well, what we're looking at now is a little bit of an interim solution. We do have a direct route that is part of the Lake Oswego to Portland streetcar line. So when the streetcar was originally being considered from Lake Oswego to Portland, along with that was the regional trail that would have run parallel to that track. And so Metro did most of the design work for that trail. But with the streetcar being put on hold right now, we are putting together the best we can to accommodate commuter bicycles from the Selwood Bridge. So originally, the commuter bicycles weren't necessarily going to go through Willamette Park, but they were going to run adjacent to the trail.
Mm-hmm.
I just would like to also speak with the trail width just for. We are from the southern end of the park. There is the trail will be... the paved trail will be 10 feet to 12 feet wide for commuting bicycles. And then we are also providing a 36-inch, a 3-foot wide soft surface trail for pedestrians, so in that southern loop of the park, so that we are trying to separate the joggers and the walkers and everybody that are going to be using that loop from the commuting bicyclists. And then the commuting bicyclists will go onto the park road. It will be improved. And everybody else can still be walking along the greenway and things like that. So we are trying to make a big effort to increase the width of the trail, separate bicyclists from pedestrians who want to walk that loop, and to make it as safely as possible for all users.
Mr. Mayor, too, I think there's a bigger issue that you've touched upon, and that is traditionally in parks, we've been thinking about recreation activities. That's what we've been. So when we've been designing trails, it's to things like overlooks and viewpoints and access and all those kinds of things. But increasingly, particularly on the west side, our parks are becoming part of the transportation infrastructure. And so that creates additional stress, particularly in parks like Willamette, where you have so many things already happening. But it's led to new design types in South Waterfront, you know, completely separated paths, and East Bank Esplanade, we're finding even it is jammed with people. So it's causing us to think of maybe our parks and recreation facilities as part of the transportation infrastructure as well.
Yeah, it seems to me, I mean, just thinking about the separated design in South Waterfront versus this, that, again, no criticism intended here, but we're making it up as we go along to some extent. And then we also have these sections where we don't own the property.
Right.
It seems to me a need for maybe even more collaboration between transportation and parks and others on this front than we've had so far to figure this out.
Right.
But if we want to get a, you know, run to where the ball's going, to use a sports soccer, in this case, metaphor, rather than chasing it, you know, we might want to figure some of these things out sooner rather than later, and then try to enforce that design regimen through more than one project.
Mayor, can I just touch on that for
please.
A second? Because I think you're raising a wonderful point. And now that you are the acting Parks Commissioner, where you're going to see this.
He is the Parks Commissioner, not the acting Parks Commissioner.
We'll see if I'm acting.
Now that Commissioner Fritz is the parliamentarian, acting. Let me just say that you're going to get, this issue is going to be framed for you in its sharpest relief in North Portland, with the North Portland Greenway.
Right.
And it is a very challenging issue. We're working with the community to find a preferred route that will take you from St. John's to the Rose Quarter. Currently, the preferred route, which would be a river route, would run along a private road that both the cement company that is operating it and the railroad that's adjacent have very strong views about bikes being on it.
Yes.
So, to your point, in the planning process, Parks has come up with an alternative, which is Greeley as a backup if those issues can't be resolved. Now, this may be one, even with your history of working with the railroads, this one may be the nut we can't crack because of the safety issues. But we have been working with Swan Island, with Daimler, and with stakeholders to see if we can. But your point is very well taken because these are very challenging, and so there ought to be a vision that assumes everything aligns. But then what we're often forced to do is come up with sort of a backup plan, the piecemeal approach, which allows there to be some circulation while we're navigating a railroad issue or a right-of-way issue or a property ownership issue. But I think your point is extremely well taken, and I think the North Portland Greenway may be the most vexing of all those because of the complexity of the competing uses on the preferred route. But I think you're absolutely right in saying there needs to be a larger vision that guides this. Short term, though, we have to find a place to accommodate a lot of bikes, and that's going to be the challenge.
Yeah, I mean, if you contrast the experience of, and I know this park very well because having worked in this building once before and being a fair to middling sometime noontime runner, Willamette Park is just about the distance that I could make before I needed to turn around and come back and get ready for 1 o'clock. And so I spent a lot of time on this ad hoc section of trail and know that 4-foot wide sidewalk at the north end of the park that takes the 90-degree turn very well, because I knew then I could walk around the park and catch my breath before I made the return trip. So you contrast that experience with Stanley Park in Vancouver, right, where the public owns the entire distance. Well, then they extruded that design actually into Yale Town and Coal Harbor. So the public owned the big chunk of it. The city figured it out, said, this is going to be popular. We're going to put a bikeway and a separate sidewalk all the way around this signature park. And then as we redevelop these adjacent areas, we're going to carry that design into the redevelopment areas. So now I think you can go all the way from Science World to the commuter rail station in Vancouver through a combination of public parks and private easements that has this consistency of design and, not surprisingly, enormous good weather usage.
Right.
So I think we're looking at that kind of quality of urban environment in our waterfront as we have cleaned up our river and people want to get back to it, as we restore habitat, as this project proposes to do, as we build out more choices for people how they're going to run, bike, or walk. This is a big deal. And I guess my sense is, again, no villain of the piece, that we corporately haven't quite gotten in front of that with the vision that you just mentioned, Commissioner Fish, and maybe all of us and all of the bureaus involved need to redouble that effort and revisit some of those assumptions about, you know, what are we going to expect in the long run and what can we do in the present.
I also think the timing just has to be acknowledged. The demise of the streetcar to Lake Oswego and that planning process is a fairly recent vintage. And so there's going to have to be a bigger rethink of that connectivity.
Yeah, I'll be interested in participating in that.
So, Mayor, as the former commissioner in charge of the Office of Equity and Human Rights, I am concerned to hear about the 3-foot soft trail next to the 10-foot paved trail. First of all, I don't think 3 feet is enough for two people to stroll comfortably together. But second of all, doesn't that mean that there will be fewer pedestrians on the paved surface so that the people who are using wheelchairs and the parents with strollers are going to be having even more cyclists endangering them by whipping past at high speeds?
We also have the opportunity along the river where it will have a paved 10-foot wide trail. All along the whole Greenway Trail along the park will be 10 foot wide.
But the direct route is along the bike route. So if a pedestrian wants to just get from A to B, I'm not sure I'm seeing the utility of a 3 foot soft trail.
The 3 foot soft trail is only a small part of the southern loop, so that people who'd like to walk a loop, they would have that opportunity. The trail, the commuting bike trail and the Greenway Trail on the west, the commuting bike trail will be on the west side of the park. The Greenway Trail that we're improving to 10 feet and bringing up the surface area on the west side of the park is the same distance for getting through the park. We're just trying to separate users so that people who have limited abilities or want to just enjoy the bank or everything will be separated from the commuter bikes. I understand also for the loop, we've also provided a paved trail up by the soccer fields that also would provide a loop. So we're trying to balance all those needs.
But where would people in wheelchairs go if they want to just go directly like a commuter?
They would go to the west side. They would go to the east side. That will all be totally paved, and it goes all the way through the park, all the direction.
No, but if they're not interested in the scenic route, if they just want to get...
It would be the same length. It's not any quicker.
So is there going to be any striping on the paved, on the 10-foot paved to have a place where people who can't use the soft trail would be able to be?
Yes, they will still be able to use it, and it will still be striped, and it will also be signed. And as I said, we're also going to encourage slow to moderate speeds within the park for all commuter uses.
And how would that be?
We'll sign it. Well, we will do a lot of that through construction, but it will definitely be signed and how it will be designed. And we'll do a lot of education and outreach to commuter bikes who are going through the park.
It's a typical multi-purpose trail. We're trying to make it wide enough. Part of the other constraints are there's a field there. So unless we want to lose a field or not have adequate buffer from adjacent neighbors, we have a fairly small window to kind of to work within.
Thank you. Other questions? And no one else signed up to testify? Then we'll take a roll call on receiving on accepting the report.
Resolution?
So moved.
It's a resolution.
Is there a second?
Second.
Fritz?
Thank you for this presentation. Thank you for all the members of the advisory committee who are here, as well as the staff. And I'm going to read the names of the project advisory committee because I know that many of these folks have committed decades of their lives to this area. Leslie Paul Cosbo, Carrie Chipman, Roger Averback, Bernadette Lee, thank you for being here today. Julia Babcock, Jim Gorder, thank you. Bill Daneman, Lee Beulah, Ken Love, Mike Dowd, thank you for being here. Jeannie Gaelic, Alan Field, and Jim Harper. So we have a wealth of community members who care passionately about this park and have worked very constructively with the staff, and I greatly appreciate it. Aye.
Fish.
You know, this has been a fairly drama-free process, except I'm reminded that when Oregon Public Broadcasting was thinking of holding the presidential debates, we got a taste in Willamette Park of what it is to have Portland on the map. And what we were facing through that debate planning process was literally a takeover by the feds of the park, a shutdown of river access, and a staging ground for all the security people that had to be there with presidential candidates. And I think all of us breathed a sigh of relief when that debate was canceled, because it was going to have an enormous negative impact on people who use that park. I'm reminded as I look at this outstanding plan that once again John Charles Olmsted over 100 years ago had this vision. And it really is remarkable that, you know, in his plan is this notion that at this location there is an opportunity to have a park and the benefits to our community. And I don't say that just for the benefit of Mike Haug. It really is extraordinary that this document is still relevant. But I think it was in the 20s when we started acquiring this and years later when there was some planning. So this is a long time coming. But I believe when this plan is implemented, we'll finally have it right. I want to thank the crack team at Parks, particularly Emily and Alan and Elizabeth and everyone who's worked on this. I want to thank our partners at BES, Water, and RAC. Parks and BES have a unique partnership when they do these kinds of things. And they work together a lot, but I think this one with Water and RAC just added even greater depth to the work. I want to join my friend Commissioner Fritz in thanking the Project Advisory Committee. And also I want to thank Jim Gorder, who's here, or was here, who really did yeoman's work in helping to help us think through some issues in Forest Park that led to five substantial things that we did differently because of his work. I want to thank Walker Macy for their outstanding assistance and the work that they do helping shape these plans. And, you know, money is going to be a challenge in implementing this. My hope is we'll be able to come back to the council at some point with some good data and a good story about why we think we can go forward with a bond measure. And, you know, whether this particular project is an eligible project and meets the priority list or not, it's an example of projects we have across the city where with a reasonable investment of funds, we can take existing parks and make them function at a much higher level. But I'm also reminded that we have parts of our city that have no parks and that ultimately those investments may come first because people don't have access to this wonderful system. Thank you, Mike, and all of your team for your great work, and I'm pleased to vote aye.
Saltzman?
Good work.
Aye.
Thanks.
Novick?
Aye.
Hales?
You know, to me, this discussion that we've had among the council and with you and with the others that came here today perfectly encompasses why we're such a great park system. I mean, I was fortunate to be in this room when Mr. Abate and Commissioner Fish accepted that award on behalf of the City of Portland. And the points that we've just touched on, both in these comments from the council and in what you've covered here, to me sort of cover that whole amazing story, that we have a framework plan that's 112 years old that we're still executing project by project, opportunity by opportunity. We have great professional planners in the Bureau that know how to design projects but also know how to listen to other people when they do. We have people in the community that care, and everybody thinks they own these parks. Other bureaus, Water Bureau and BES and RAC think they own the park. People that live next door think they own the park. People that live 10 miles away think they own the park. Planning students at Portland State think they own the park. Members of the council think we own the park and have detailed comments about it. And we're all right. We all own the park.
Actually, Mayor Ken Love actually does own this park.
Just want to make that, as a matter of fact, clear. I do own the park.
So, yeah.
So we all have this amazing investment in the system. It's not confined by the boundaries of one bureau. So I think that's one of the reasons why we won that award, is that we all think we own the park. We all think we have a responsibility to help make it work. This is a great park and part of a great system, and I'm very pleased with this master plan. Look forward to seeing it carried out. Aye. Approved. And the next item is also a parks item, number 105. Thank you all.
Item 105, accept the 2012 master plan for the Werben property as a guide for future development of the park.
Mr. Fish, anything on this one?
No, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And if I could change gears a little bit and follow up on what Commissioner Fish said, we've just been talking about a long-term existing park. Today, we're here to talk about a master plan for a new piece of property in one of our most parks-deficient neighborhoods, the Cully neighborhood in East Portland. As you know, as part of our 2020 vision, we are trying to fill in gaps, gaps that we have identified in our half-mile service area. That's our primary level of service delivery to measure. And this is an incredible opportunity. The Werben property would provide parks access to 3,000 residents in the city of Portland within a half a mile. So this is a huge opportunity. The design and the construction of this project will be funded by the Park System Development Charges, SDCs, which is exactly the reason we have SDCs, to fund demands of new development for parks and open spaces, particularly in deficient areas. So at this point, I'd like to introduce Sarah Huggins, the Parks Planner. She'll present the new design, talk about our plans for construction.
Thank you, Mike. I'm Sarah Huggins. Good morning, Mayor Hales and Commissioners. I'm a Parks Planner. And I'd also like to introduce Nicole Markwell and her daughter Layla, and Rich Gunderson. And Nicole and Rich both volunteered to serve on our project advisory committee, and they'll be joining me and helping with the presentation today. Nicole is actually going to start us off.
Hi, I'm Nicole Markwell. This is Rose. I live in the Coley neighborhood, and I have four children, a 9-year-old, a 5-year-old, a 3-year-old, and then Rose is 7 months. And it was really exciting to get to work on the advisory committee. I was a member of the advisory committee. And to watch the park sort of come together and to be able to have kind of my input in it. It was neat to watch it because when we talked about it, we talked about the needs of people like me who have children who will be attending the park. I'm very active at this PTA. At Harvey Scott School, so to think about what kind of children are there that would attend the park, it was really fun to talk about that. It's going to be along Alberta Street, which is a bike street, and we like to ride our bikes, so neat to think about how we could ride our bikes and stop at the park and have fun. We talked about maybe ways to use the park as a community stopping area, as pickup soccer, and so it's going to have a lot of different uses. It's going to be a lot of fun for our whole family and even the people, you know, who live nearby who don't have children yet.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nicole. The Werben Property Master Plan was developed as a collaborative effort between the community and Portland Parks and Recreation, and I want to thank Greenworks. We worked with them. They're a local landscape architecture firm to translate our shared vision for the plan into the concept plan that we'll be sharing with you today. A little history about the site. There we go. Portland Parks purchased the 2.4-acre Werben property back in 2009 for the purpose of developing a neighborhood park in Coley. The Portland Parks has a goal that's outlined in our Parks 2020 vision of providing a park or natural area within a half mile of every residence, and the residences within the half mile of the Werben property are not currently being served by another park or natural area. So when we celebrate the grand opening of the Werben property, as Mike Abate mentioned, we'll be celebrating that a bunch of new households now have access to their own neighborhood park. We developed the concept plan over the course of about 9 months, and there were three main phases to the process. In each phase, we had a project open house, we had a project advisory committee meeting, we had broad open public comment period, and we also did some additional targeted outreach. In the first phase, we really focused on getting feedback on the types of amenities that people wanted to see in this new park. In the second phase, we got feedback on three diverse concepts that Greenworks prepared. And in the final phase, we vetted feedback on a preferred draft. And ultimately, after weighing all of the public feedback, our project advisory committee recommended the following concept. The design is really oriented around a flexible lawn area. It's suitable for informal activities or community gatherings and events. The heart of the design is really a nature play area, which will include opportunities for water play and the ability to make water spray and also manipulate how it will run downhill. It will also include some climbing boulders and a slide that takes advantage of some natural topography on the site. And while we heard a strong preference for nature play in our planning process, we also heard loud and clear that the community loves swings. So we're including a smaller traditional play area that will have a swing set. We have a small gathering, a covered gathering picnic area, and we also have some additional more informal picnic areas that are scattered throughout the park. We're including a skate dock on the eastern side of the park, which is a very small skate area suitable for younger, very beginner users. And we will also include some bioswales that will treat stormwater from the park improvements and also the streetscape improvements. As part of the park development, we are also going to be improving the streetscapes on 52nd and Alberta in front of the park, and that will include some new sidewalks. We've been coordinating very closely with our friends at Bureau of Transportation on that streetscape improvement work. The cost estimate for this concept is $1.3 million for improvements of the park and $500,000 for streetscape improvements. And both the park and the streetscape improvements are going to be paid for by park system development charges that we've already set aside to fund the construction of this project. So park staff are beginning the next steps of creating construction documents and getting ready for construction, and we hope to celebrate the grand opening of this new park in spring 2015. And Rich Gunderson is going to close with a few words.
Okay. Commissioners, Mayor, it's a pleasure to be here and to see this new council. I'm really looking forward to working with all of you. I want to thank Parks for this opportunity for a park for our neighborhood. I was going to go into the benefits of parks and recreation, but I think, like Charles Jordan used to say, it would be like preaching to the choir. So I'll just go into a little bit about the neighborhood. Cully was annexed to the city in the mid-80s, and there was a lot of expectations within the neighborhood for the city to meet some of the deficiencies of the neighborhood and make some capital improvements. And unfortunately, that was slow in coming. But actually, now there's some hope. We're making steady progress on Thomas Cully Park. The Cully Boulevard Green Street process is almost complete, and the big five the intersection of five avenues, which was a big danger area, is complete. And now the acquisition of this property and the master planning process gives us hope. And once this park is developed, it will be the first developed park in the largest neighborhood area in the whole city. I worked in the parks and recreation profession for over 30 years, and I had the opportunity of working with many neighborhood associations developing master plans for their neighborhood parks. And this one by far had the most community input of any that I've been involved with. Because of that fact, I think the park, once it is developed, is going to be a huge asset to our community and also to the Portland park system. Thank you.
Questions for this panel? No? Thank you all. Thanks very much. And do we have anyone else signed up to testify?
We have one person, Kathy Furstenau.
Morning.
Morning. Oh. Had to go plug the meter, so that's why I had to leave a little bit ago. Okay. My name is Kathy Furstenau, and I'm Mayor Harris and City Commissioners. I'm so happy to be here today to advocate for the adoption of the master plan for the new park on Northeast 52nd and Alberta. This will be the first completely developed park in the 2007-acre Cully neighborhood, so it's very exciting. I've always been envious of the other neighborhoods that have been able to hold gatherings and events in the parks, like Neighbors Night Out, concerts in the park, movies in the park. So in 2 years, Cully will be able to participate in such community events and have a place for both children and adults to enjoy. Though the Cully Association of Neighbors membership did not have an opportunity to vote on the final draft of the master plan for the new park, the overall consensus of the park reel presentation at our September 11th, 2012 meeting was favorable. The membership was very excited to see the designs and hear about the amenities. We look forward to participating in the park naming process so we can stop calling it Werben Property Park. I'd rather just have it say Northeast 52nd and Alberta for right now anyway. The only disappointing part of the presentation was the timeline, in that the park wouldn't be finished until 2015, which seemed like an awful long time for that process to happen. So my hope is that everything can proceed at a brisk pace so that the park could be finished in 2014. I think that would be great. So I want to thank Commissioner Fish for allocating the funds to move this project forward. Also thank Parks Director Mike Abate and the Park Bureau staff and the community members that were on the advisory committee for their work
their community outreach in creating this master plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Kathy?
So I guess I do have a question for staff.
Okay. Thank you, Kathy. Appreciate it.
Thank you. And this follows up from Kathy's questioning and also on last week's presentation on the E205 projects, where a huge amount of work was done for a relatively small amount of money in 10 different parks. And you had said that that was because park staff were doing a lot of the work. Is it possible for park staff to do some of the work here and speed it up a bit?
Commissioner Fish, I think that's a
Ritz.
Did I say? I'm sorry.
Happens all the time. Don't worry about it.
I consider it a great compliment.
They work with you,
but it's Fritz.
Commissioner Fritz, good question. I think there's a difference between installing a playground or installing a bench and completing an entire park. And when we're in constructing an entire park, it's probably not that we don't have the capacity to do it, but it would lock up all of our staff on one project for 6 or 8 months, and we would not be able to do any of the improvements, you know, in other parts of the system. And I think that's why we have a contracting process and a bid process, is to provide opportunities for living wage jobs that are outside of city employees. So this would go through the next step, as Sarah mentioned, is to go through the detailed design, preparing the construction drawings that would go to bid, and then bid and construct it using a contractor.
So maybe you could consider making different parts of the process different contracts. So I have it. I know that usually we do a general contractor and who does the whole thing, but there's certainly different elements of this that could have community involvement, that could have a landscaping company versus a parks, the demolition of the current structure and such. So I just encourage you to think about that. The other concern I have is that it's noted as a seasonal restroom. Walker Macy designed the Holly Farm Park in my neighborhood in a very similar process, and we have found it is used year-round. Whenever it's not pouring with rain, there are people in the park, and so I would encourage you to consider that a restroom and not seasonal. And one of the pieces that was added in our park was some decorative screening around the porta potty. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we don't have the money for a full plumbed restroom.
Okay.
Maybe we do, maybe we don't. But I think it's going to be well used, and it's important for people to have a proper place to go to the bathroom. Maybe we could even have a loo in there so that we encourage people to use it year-round.
Okay. Thank you. We'll do.
Yes, please.
That actually reminds me of, I think, a conversation we had a while ago, but I don't remember the outcome. So was there some thought of substituting a loo so we do get... And I think Commissioner Fritz's point needs to be underscored with the kind of budget cuts we're talking about. We're having difficulty doing routine maintenance in our parks, generally. So, and I know we're putting a loo in the field. So is that an option? And would that address the question of year-round use?
So we did look at a loo instead of a porta-potty or seasonal restroom. And what we've been trying to do is target more permanent restrooms at our larger, more regionally sized parks, where people are going to be coming more from outside the neighborhood. And this at 2.4 acres is really intended to be a park that will primarily serve that more immediate Cully area. One of the other considerations when we were looking at the loo is, while the initial cost to construct it is fairly reasonable, it would almost double sort of our anticipated annual maintenance budget for a park of this size. And so for that reason, we're showing a seasonal restroom.
I think, though, that families with multiple small children, by the way, Rose is being amazingly good. I'm very impressed. It's if you're walking a half mile to get to the park and then have to try to make it home a half mile when your five-year-old says they need to go right now, I think that's a challenge. And so at the very least, I'd like a year-round porta-potty, but I agree that people need to go when they need to go, whether it's downtown or in Cully, and I'd encourage us to look again at that.
But I also just, on the other point that was raised, Mike, the question of how we do our contracting, I'm thinking about the fields, which we'll be doing a soft opening this spring. I believe under the concerted plan that we put in place, we got about 60% participation MWESB.
Slightly more than that, yes.
I don't think there's a project in the city that's come close. We're also, at the same time, trying to develop capacity within the contracting community.
That's right.
It's a specialized niche. So I think that the point that Commissioner Fritz makes about thinking about unbundling pieces or thinking creatively about the contracting is something we should continue to do, and particularly since we're in Cully, where we have a completely different model, for example, with the Let Us Build Cully Park Now community in terms of how we've done the community garden. So I would encourage you to be as creative as possible about thinking about new and innovative ways of doing contracting, which create opportunity for people typically left out of this work and also for the community.
Okay. Thank you. Will do.
Good. Other discussion, other questions for staff? Then I'd like a motion on accepting the report.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Fritz?
Well, again, thank you to staff and thank you to the community, particularly the Project Advisory Committee. There are a few more challenging names in this list, but I'm going to try to read them anyway because people do put a lot of time into this. And although there were three meetings, so it's done expeditiously, there's a lot of background. So thank you to Michael Alexander, who was the Portland Parks and Recreation Board liaison, Jennifer Alizwini, Victoria Demchak, Karen Gonzalez, Rich Gunderson, David Kurishima, Alejandro Manzo, Nicole Markwell, Gina Matayoda, Shayla Rogers, Kathleen Sheridan, Cesar Torres, and Mercedes Yanez. Aye.
Fish.
So I want to first acknowledge that one thing that wasn't said about Cully is it, I believe, on a census basis, is our most diverse neighborhood, and it also has some of the most intractable poverty that we've been trying to address. And it was really the framework that, in my view, has helped change the relationship between city council and that community was the Cully Concordia Plan. And it was, I think, the best community planning exercise, perhaps other than the East Portland Community Action, East Portland Plan, at least during my service. And it's where the community set some priorities. And as a result of that, the city's been very intentional about addressing a number of them. And so we have Thomas Cully Park, and we have a master plan, and now we have a garden, which is progress. According to things I read in the paper, there's something happening with Colwood that may or may not percolate at some point. Hacienda has a new futsal field that allows kids to play in a safe area that's fenced in. But we face in Cully the same dilemma we did when we launched E205, which is there's a lot of momentum, tremendous leadership at the neighborhood level, but we're not able to deliver as quickly as we wanted on the promise of bringing the system up to par. And that's really where Mike and the Bureau and the team came up with this project, because it was scaled right. It was something we could do, and we didn't want to keep, you know, frankly, having excuses as to why we couldn't move on Thomas Cully, although what we all understand that we're, whatever, $15 to $20 million short on that project. So we wanted to deliver a win. And this was where the focus went. And I believe the expeditious planning process, the funding source, which is systems development charges, and the commitment of leadership is going to get this park done. And so I really want to first thank Rich and Kathy and the neighborhood folks, who are great partners. And you never get enough credit, but we have a unique relationship with this community. I want to thank the parks team for doing this really quickly. And Sarah is, I think the first plan she did was the updating of the Lentz Park, the Lentz Master Plan, which I hope will be part of a future bond measure, because that park needs to be updated. But Sarah's one of our stars. The whole team I want to thank at Parks. And I want to echo something Kathy said. If there is a way to expedite the delivery of this, we should do it. The mayor ran on a platform of actually finding ways of speeding up the permitting process, so I think this ought to go in the hopper, because we ought to find a way to accelerate it. And in terms of the naming, I hope Parks pulls together soon a community group and follows this naming policy to come up with something great, because this should have a great name for a great new park. And I thank everyone for making this day possible. Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
I would like to thank everybody for their work on this. This is so impressive. And just since this is a Parks Day, I just wanted to make the general comment that I think that people tend to think of economic development and public safety and parks as three different things. But, I mean, when I think about what one of the most important things we could do to improve our economy would be to stem the rising tide of healthcare costs, which tends to drown businesses and governments and families. And the more we learn about how much even a little bit of physical activity does to improve people's health, building out our park system will make people healthier, and that will reduce healthcare costs, and that'll help our economy. And I mean, the fire bureau obviously is a big chunk of our public safety system, and most of their calls are health-related calls. And if people were healthier, they'd get fewer calls. So, I mean, I appreciate the work you're doing just in terms of having a prettier, nicer place for people to live, but having a strong park system also does help us meet our other goals. So thank you very much, and aye.
Hales.
Great process and a great project. It's going to be exciting for us all to be out there enjoying this park, and look forward to that very much. Bravo. Aye. Thank you. Okay, regular agenda item 111.
Authorize the Chief of Police to execute intergovernmental agreements and amendments for Portland Police Data System and the successor Regional Justice Information Network in support of law enforcement information sharing.
Second reading, roll call, please.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Item 112.
Adopt the budget calendar for fiscal year 2013-14.
Thank you. Jeremy Patton, our principal financial analyst, is here, and I think the council has all been consulted on the calendar, so hopefully you're here to present something everyone's prepared to move forward with.
I can make my presentation very brief. Again, Jeremy Patton with City Budget Office. Basically, the calendar includes two new items that I think you've all been briefed on. The first item is an addition of three public hearings that will happen between February 28th and April 15th. And the second item is between February 28th and May 1st, we'll have a series of council subcommittee meetings. And I can go into any more detail if you'd like, but if you'd like to move along, that's fine too.
Questions, further requests for the City Budget Office?
If you could just announce, Mayor, what your process is for appointing citizen budget advisors. Can people contact you if they're interested in serving?
Yes, please.
And who should they address that to?
Josh Alpert. Other comments, questions? You may have brought this in for a landing then. All right, thank you. And we'll take a is that the resolution?
Can I confirm first, Mayor, over City Attorney's side?
Aye.
So is this an exhibit to the resolution? So do they need to move the amendment or the new exhibit first?
Yes.
Okay, so I have a motion to substitute the new exhibit?
Second.
So, all right. Do we need to vote on that motion, please?
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay, so we've substituted the new exhibit, which is the new version of the calendar. And now, unless there's further council discussion, we're prepared to take a roll call on the resolution.
Fritz?
Well, thank you, Mayor, and the City Budget Office for responding to my concerns last week. So there are now going to be, well, there were before, but now it's on the calendar, going to be three public hearings on requested budgets sometime between February 28th and April 15th. The exact dates have not yet been confirmed. We had some discussions in my office about having them mostly in March, and then close to when the mayor's budget is, when the decision is going to be made. There will also be, of course, the last hearing on May 15th, but I encourage citizens not to wait until the last hearing on May 15th. So there will be lots of opportunity for public input. It's going to be a very difficult budget, and so we're going to need to make this decision together. We are all in this together, and we're going to have to make some very difficult choices together. So I appreciate this calendar setting out how we're going to do that. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Hales?
I want to thank members of the council and also our budget office for getting this in an orderly and very open and very painfully complete format, because this is going to be a difficult budget process. I think the way we get through this in good order and build for for the future is to have the whole council very engaged, have the community very engaged, and have the whole process be as transparent as possible, even though I have the responsibility to ultimately lay a proposed budget on the table. So this process is intended to get us to that environment, and I want to encourage council members and anyone else to keep coming forward with both ideas for how we proceed and specific ideas for how we make this very difficult budget balancing process get to balance ultimately. Aye.